The Monty Show on a massive Monday. Boy, what a great weekend in sports, hey, Jake?
Really good. Very compelling.
Yeah, very compelling. Was there, just right out of the gate, what's one of the main things that stood out to you in sports this weekend?
I mean, for me, it was the Masters. That's the biggest thing over the weekend. There's a lot of subpar like storylines in baseball and the NBA and things like that, but the Masters took the weekend, as it should.
Wow. Has that ever happened to you before? Has the Masters ever been the lead on anything in your life?
Not in my life, but I think when you compare it, like, is it the Masters or is it Eric Hosmer missing a ball by 2 feet that made him look like an idiot?
Shohei Ohtani's near-perfect game?
Not for me, but...
You're such a hater.
Close doesn't count, bro. He pitched well. Close doesn't count.
Yeah, Anthony Rizzo being hurt's a big story for me. The Masters was a huge deal. I thought the Jazz over the weekend, the NBA playoffs. There's just so much that happened this weekend. Without further ado, why don't we get to work here on The Monty Show? A couple of things you got to do. You got to find me online, themontyshow.com. M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. Is where you find everything we talk about. I write a daily blog that talks about all the show topics, my opinions on them. Make sure you find us online. TheMontyShow.com is where you can find us there. And then, of course, make sure you subscribe to our podcast on SoundCloud and on iTunes. And it's all TheMontyShow.com. Young Jake, what was so compelling to you about the Masters?
I mean, I just think Reed coming out of nowhere. Like, I mean, sure, he may have been established on the tour, but for me, he came out of nowhere. I mean, nobody was talking about him before the Masters came up. Nobody was talking about, hey, he's a favorite going into the weekend. Everybody was talking about, well, this is Tiger's opportunity to reestablish himself and be Tiger again.
Yeah.
And that just straight up didn't happen. Tiger struggled at times. He had a nice final round, but it just wasn't quite there. He's not at a point right now where he could go out and win the Masters.
Yeah,
I don't think.
The nice thing about this weekend for me is I really didn't care about Tiger Woods. It didn't, honest to goodness, it did not matter to me in the slightest bit that Tiger was not in contention. I was full on rooting for Jordan Spieth to make his comeback. It was unlikely at best because he was nine shots off the lead, excuse me. So you kind of knew that wasn't going to happen, but then he got even and it was really close. And I thought the thing that stood out about Patrick Reed was he was just so calm and collected, like nothing was fazing him.
Yeah, he just didn't make any mistakes or I shouldn't say that. He didn't make any mistakes that really cost him or put him in a position where there was ever a doubt if he was going to win or not. I mean, sure, Spieth pulled even at one point, but he never really came over and got over the top, right? And I think that was a big deal. I think, you know, Reed, he didn't dominate, but man, it felt like he was going to win the whole time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I also think, you know, one of the funnier parts about this, and I could be wrong about this, and I'm wholeheartedly open to this. Patrick Reed is one of those guys that everybody says, oh, he's a great story. He's a great story. And the thing that really stands out to me is that I don't think Patrick Reed's that great of a story. I think he's got an odd personal life. And of course, when you win the Masters, this kind of stuff starts coming out.
Yeah.
He's estranged from his parents because Patrick Reed got married at 22 years old to a woman that was older than him. And his parents were like, whoa, 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 why don't we slow this down? And Patrick Reed said, no, I'm never talking to you again. Walked out of their lives after they supported him when he got kicked off the Georgia golf team at UGA for being drunk. And he was accused of cheating at one point in golf where he had put a ball down that was closer to the fairway. He went to Augusta State. They supported him there, even though his teammates all hated him, voted to kick him off the team. And then he started dominating on the course. And so they didn't. Like, Patrick Reed is not your normal slice of bread.
A lot of adversity.
Do you care about any of that?
Well, I mean, I don't know if care is the right word. I acknowledge the fact that it happened. But, you know, at this point, all of those issues are issues in his past. And I think, you know, when it comes to alcohol, that's a different story, as everybody knows. But I think family issues, everybody can relate to. We all have them. We've all been through them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can judge the guy for marrying, you know, an older woman or whatever, but that's his prerogative. That's his choice. So for me, it doesn't bother me at all. What I like is that he went out and performed.
See, like, I like the personal life stuff. Like,
yeah.
I get into, you know, how guys are off the course. I think it matters. And
it made Tiger Woods' demise.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, if Tiger Woods' personal battles matter, How do Patrick Reed's personal battles not matter? The guy just won the Masters.
Totally.
So I do think it matters, and I actually do care about those kind of stories. But I also think he played excellent golf, and I give him a lot of credit for having that fortitude and hanging in there and having some cojones to make a bunch of really nice putts. He putted really well. I thought that, Jordan Spieth, if he didn't have a terrible Saturday, I think he's got a legitimate shot to win this tournament, obviously, because, well, he had a legitimate shot even when he was nine back, apparently.
Yeah.
So I thought that was great. But Ricky Fowler playing really well and being right there and finishing second in the tournament, I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Because I think the young guys are really important to golf. But I'm still, I didn't know this, and we didn't talk about this part of it before the show, but I'm really surprised that the Masters is your number one thing that happened this past weekend.
Well, I mean, it's not like the Masters isn't, an 82-game schedule. It's 4 days, every year where the best golfers come together and put together, some special rounds. And I think when you go into this Masters and all I'm seeing on ESPN and all the, the sports news networks is that Tiger's going to come out and win this thing, I'm just thinking to myself, what gave you that idea?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, sure, it's an opportunity for the guy, but there's no way that he was ever in a position to really go out and win it. I think this was a test. This was really an exam for Tiger to work off of and understand
Absolutely.
Where he's at.
Yeah.
I mean, Augusta's going to test the best of him, and it really did. And so, you look at someone like Rory, who was said to be the front runner on Sunday, and that just didn't happen for him. He did not perform.
He melted down.
I mean, it just didn't happen. Whereas you have Spieth and Ricky, who come in on Sunday, play great rounds respectively, and it's just not good enough because Reed had such a hot start to the tournament. He established that lead.
And he got some bounces.
He did.
Everything was going his way, but your McIlroy thing, I think there's something in that. I'm not saying that he's not going to win again, or he's fallen behind, in my opinion. Ricky Fowler's that next guy I look at like, yeah, he's got to win here. Like, he's got to be the next guy because he's so close, and he's been there so many times, but he in the orange pants has not finished the deal.
Yeah.
And at some point, the Leonardo DiCaprio doppelganger, because he looks just like Leo, he's got to find a way to win a major tournament.
Yeah.
And I think he will. Masters or the story of the Utah Jazz? Because not that I work there, not that I live there, not that I root for that team, but I think this Jazz team is one of the true Cinderella stories in recent NBA history. They're playing great basketball. They're solidly in the fourth spot. There's a legitimate shot that they could catch the Blazers in third. That's a pretty big story, in my opinion. I think it's not the Masters, but I think the NBA playoffs, and especially this Western Conference race, Jake, I think that's a clear number two here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Just right off the top, judging this season at face value, I don't know how Quinn Snyder's not the coach of the year, number one. Oh. Number two, I don't know how Donovan Mitchell's not the rookie of the year at this point. I understand that the 76ers have won like 15 in a row or 14 in a row and are making a ton of noise down the stretch here, but their road to get there is far easier. Not only schedule-wise, the quality of opponent in the East is far less. I think the West is just a buzzsaw of sorts. I mean, the talent in the West, the team chemistry in the West is superior. There are better all-around teams in the West, and yet the Jazz still have found a way to hunt down Portland. They have stayed on it all year long, even when it was in doubt that they would
even make the playoffs. Well, Portland's had kind of a weird run here. Dame missing time and, the birth of his child and then that tragedy where his, stepbrother, I guess it was, got shot and... Like, they've just had a weird run of luck here that is set up perfectly for the Jazz, who I think you got to beat Golden State tomorrow. And it's really unfortunate that this game on Wednesday in Portland, which will end the season, that this is a back-to-back. Because it's not any back-to-back. It's back-to-back at home against Golden State on the road in Portland. Those are two really good teams. Meanwhile, Portland's got Denver tonight, and then they get a day off Tuesday. Finish the season with the Jazz on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So clear advantage to Portland schedule-wise there.
Yep.
But, A, where are you at with your Golden State Warriors? because they're coming to Salt Lake City tomorrow night, and I think it's going to be quite the contest.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a gimme win, and anybody who thinks that it's Warriors versus Jazz, so the Warriors are going to win, is just crazy. I mean, I think the Warriors have done a nice job surviving and staying up atop the Western Conference. I think that
10-game lead they have over third.
Yeah, you know, but like seriously, you could easily see them, you know, having lost that gap with all the injuries they suffered. I mean, their role players have stepped up and filled in the gap, and now they've got KD back, they've got Klay Thompson back. All their guys are starting to come back. And I still don't feel the right energy with that team.
What's going on with KD? Something's not right.
I don't know. It's just a weird vibe. I don't think they have the momentum that they've had in past years. They certainly don't have.
But
the
this
same
is
momentum.
Is this Kevin Durant? There's something off about Kevin Durant right now. I'm not saying he's playing poorly. We won't know because it was the Suns, but they got a much needed win last night. But there's just something not right about Kevin Durant. Watching the way he plays, 6 of 11, 17 points, you know, 4 boards, 9 assists, great.
Pedestrian.
There's something wrong with him. I don't know. He's not hurt. The mental side of Kevin Durant is lacking.
Yeah.
Like, looking at his points, that game Saturday at New Orleans was spectacular. But then you turn him on yesterday or... And it just, I don't know, there's just a weird vibe around that guy since the whole referee ejection thing. It's just, it's really strange, and I don't know how to put my finger on it.
Yeah,
there's something not right there.
I don't disagree. I think it's not just KD, though. I think his issues with the ejections have affected the team, and I don't know that there's any, like, you can't, like, put a weight on that or, like, measure the effect that that's had on the team other than to just say, you know, KD's the guy, and if they're going to win, he's going to have to power them to victory. And I think, you know, it's all cool that, you know, it's rumored that Curry's going to come back and it's going to be great, and we'll see him at some point in the postseason. At this point, it's KD and Klay and everybody else. You know, so for me, they're living on him, and this is his opportunity to say, look, I'm just as good in the playoffs as everybody else. I've just had a rough year. I don't know that that's going to happen, though.
If you're Steve Kerr, who plays in the season finale against the Jazz? Because I don't think I'd play Kevin Durant against the Jazz.
No, I mean, you definitely have, you know, bigger aspirations in the playoffs. That's
and
pretty
your spot
obvious.
Is secure.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really have – there's no incentive to win that game, you know. So I don't know. I think – that's a choice you have to make. I think we've seen that. We saw that with the Heat several times where, you know, Eric Spoelstra would sit players. You know, we've seen it with the Spurs where Pop sits players in certain matchups. And the NBA did not appreciate that, nor did the fans. So I don't know. Steve Kerr's known to do things differently. And
right,
known
but he's
to,
got a pile of dudes that have been hurt all year.
He has.
From and Draymond to Klay to Steph to KD. Like, you cannot risk it against a physical team like the Jazz.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it. And if I did, maybe I'd play him 15 minutes. The outcome just doesn't mean a thing. If he tweaks an ankle or re-injures his ribs or whatever it is, it's a waste.
Yeah.
Because the game, if you win or lose, your season ended the same way.
Yeah.
So I think I would sit him. If you're the Jazz, how important is it to get from the fourth spot to the third spot?
I think it's hugely important. I think it totally changes. It changes seeding. It changes your matchup. I mean, there's a lot of pluses to go from the fourth seed to the third seed. You know, and I just think for them, it would just be a big deal. Not just from the perspective of last year, you were trying to be the sixth seed, and now all of a sudden you've got climbed all the way to the third seed. Like, what are we even talking about?
Do you
about,
want
dude?
The Pelicans or do you want the Spurs? Because right now the 3-6 is Blazers Spurs. The 4-5 is Jazz Pels.
I would take the Pels.
You would?
I would not mess with Greg Popovich.
Oh, you're crazy. See, like, I think the Pelicans are a matchup nightmare. I think they have enough guys on that club that can make your life difficult. And I'm not even talking about the unibrow. Like, I look at guys and... I don't see any way that I want anything to do with the Pelicans. You know, whether it's Rajon Rondo, whether it is Etuan Moore, Holiday,
yeah,
Mirotic,
see, like,
is playing
all,
well
those,
for
those
them.
Those are all guys that they won't struggle with. Davis and Rondo are the guys you have to slow down to beat them. All those other three guys are
Etuan role Moore players. Is a baller. Etuan Moore is not a role player, man. That guy is a legitimate shooter.
Yeah.
And I think he is one of the guys that takes advantage of Anthony Davis's presence.
So what do the Jazz do really well? They shut down teams who rely on the 3-point ball. That's what they do. I don't worry about
can
them
they do that?
It up.
Can they do that against Anthony Davis and the Pelicans?
Yeah,
and
I
would
think
tell
they
you.
Can.
See, I don't think you can because Rudy one-on-one, nobody's stopping Anthony Davis one-on-one. You're not, and with all due respect to Rudy Gobert, you're not stopping Anthony Davis one-on-one. It's not happening. It's not possible. So my feeling is that you're going to have guys like Etuan Moore are just going to continue to kick you in the bag in that series. And so what really comes to mind, and this is something that Jazz fans don't want to talk about, what is Rudy Gobert's liability on the offensive end? Because I think I could make an argument that it's pretty significant. Because he doesn't score a lot, Rudy Gobert. And I'm not saying that he is a lesser player or he can't be on the floor. I'm not saying any of that about Rudy Gobert. What I'm saying is that the Pelicans matchup is not good for the Jazz. I would much, much, much rather have the Spurs. They're wounded. They're older. They're slower. I think the Jazz match up well with them. Am I naive to say I don't fear the Spurs? You're not going to have Kawhi Leonard.
They haven't had Kawhi Leonard all year, and that's the greatness of the Spurs. They haven't needed him. They're still in the playoffs. Like
barely.
Barely. You're in the playoffs, man.
Aldridge. LaMarcus Murray. Aldridge is probably the most difficult guy you got to deal with. Yeah, Murray is.
You still. I know Tony Parker's old, but the guy's been there and done that. And
Rudy
understands.
Gay, Manu Ginobili. I get it. But Tony Parker's a 15-minute-a-night guy. Tony Parker's not a 30-minute-a-night guy anymore. Like, I look at their makeup, and I look at Pau Gasol. I can deal with Pau. Derek Favors can deal with Pau Gasol, right? Like, you can. There's a lot of things you can do to the Spurs. If they're, you know, the guys that hurt you on the Spurs are again, I agree with you. I think it's Murray. That's the guy that is problematic, you know, but I can see, you know, Donovan Mitchell locking up with Murray. And I think you have a more than a puncher's chance of dealing with that guy. I can see a guy like the guy that scares me defensively is Ricky Rubio a little bit, you know, like he's really come on offensively, it seems like, for the Jazz, but I don't know. I'd rather play with the Spurs, no question. I mean, I don't even know why we're discussing. I'd much rather play against the Spurs. I would.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all opinion based. I think Anthony Davis is the biggest threat from the Pelicans, and everybody else is going to have to shoot the lights out for them to beat the Jazz because the Jazz are going to shut them down.
I think there's going to be Rudy Gobert would have a very difficult time because he's not going to be a factor offensively. And I think that frustrates him. And you are going to have to really watch his foul issues. He cannot afford to get into foul trouble because, frankly, he's the only way that Anthony Davis doesn't have monster game after monster game. You know, like that for my money is the biggest deal. And in this 5-game winning streak, they've done a pretty good job of not getting themselves into awkward foul trouble. You know, like Rudy Gobert is a four foul a night guy. There's not a lot of room for error there if you're playing a guy like Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
That really worries me. And the other thing that worries me about the New Orleans matchup, like, I think that really forces a guy like Jay Crowder to play a 40-minute role in that series because you need his help. So, I don't know. I'd much rather have the Spurs. Just sitting here thinking through it, hell no. I'd much rather have the Spurs and the Pelicans. In the West, what are you really looking forward to? I mean, if you look up and down those standings, the Rockets, T-Wolves, if it ended tonight, it'd be Rockets, T-Wolves. I don't think that's a blowout. I think that's a really tight series. And then Golden State and Oklahoma City in round one.
Dude. Well, those two are rivals, number one. Number two, I think if KD can't get up for that game, I don't know what game he's going to get up for because that's going back to his hometown or his former town, rather, yeah. going against Russ again. Like, it's reliving all those emotions again. And honestly, I just think the Rockets will tear through anybody they play until they get to the Western Conference Finals. Hmm. And then I think you'll have a matchup.
I think that Golden State-Oklahoma City series would be nothing short of spectacular. And just looking at how tight this is, Denver's in a must-win tonight. Like, that's why this Blazer-Denver game, if you are a Utah Jazz fan, I think you are pulling hard for the Denver Nuggets tonight. Because right now, they're tied with Minnesota for the eighth spot. They're both 45 and 35. And then one game ahead of that is Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and the Pelicans. And two games ahead of that is the Jazz in fourth. Like, that's how compact this is. Right now, you got to pick the team that's on the outside looking in.
Yeah, you do.
Is it Denver?
That's who I would pick just because they're young. They do have a lot of talent. The problem is they're not great at being a cohesive unit and playing as a team.
Well, because I don't think they're well coached.
Well, and that may be true, but in the playoffs, you know, like with the Rockets are unique because they like to play one-on-one ball. But most every other team in basketball tends to go with a more team approach, more passing, you know, more sets, more half court in the postseason. So that's where I think the Nuggets would really struggle because the Nuggets thrive on running and taking advantage of easy buckets in transition.
Mismatches with Jokic.
Things like that. And so those type of things don't typically happen in the postseason against really quality teams. So I don't know. I think they're the best candidate. But
then again, I look at Minnesota, who's got Memphis tonight.
Should beat up on them.
And if you're Denver, you've got Portland at home.
Yeah.
Like, this is that game that teams like Denver typically lose. This is one of those games where a Mike Malone coach team, you're at home, you should win.
Yeah.
Like, this should, right? This should be.
You should win, but it's
a no-brainer.
It's the Blazers. You never know.
Yeah, I think it's, you got to lean to Minnesota here. I mean, they've got Memphis, and you realize who Minnesota plays on Wednesday night. They play at home against Denver. Like, if, and this is why tonight is such a big night in the NBA. Because if Minnesota wins and Denver loses, I mean, this is going to, it just creates all this drama. No matter what happens, it creates all this drama.
Mm-hmm.
And so tonight, if you're Denver, you have to win. This is a must win. You lose, you're out.
Yeah.
And I just don't believe in Mike Malone. I don't. Now, Denver's really talented. Don't get me wrong. The Denver Nuggets are really talented. But I hate the way they play basketball.
Yeah, I mean, talent only takes you so far. I mean, LeBron James is tremendously talented. But if he didn't do all the little things within the game, they wouldn't be a very good team. And a lot of those little things are put together on the practice floor with your head coach. And I just think, you know, Ty Lue is a better coach. Like, there's so many better coaches, and I think they would be a far superior team with a better coach. But look, they have Malone. That's who they got.
So before we get to Major League Baseball today,
mm-hmm.
Ben Simmons was asked over the weekend, hey, Ben, who would you pick as Rookie of the Year this year in the NBA? Just curious. Ben Simmons told ESPN, I'd pick me 100%. And I am amazed by this because he goes on to say, I think I've been playing solid all year. Here's the part that makes your brain hurt. If you look at the numbers, you will see people who know the game know. And he was asked, like, who the other contenders are. There are no other. It's me. Like, there's nobody else. Well, the biggest problem with this, of course, is Ben Simmons isn't a rookie.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, he's gotten outplayed by Donovan Mitchell the entire second half. Like, Donovan Mitchell has carried the Jazz.
Yeah.
Offensively, almost single-handedly, Donovan Mitchell has carried the Jazz through the second half into the fourth spot in the West.
Yeah.
And Ben Simmons says, so there's no other contenders. There's, like, none. Asked what rookies have caught his attention this year. Simmons said, none. I want to be where the greats are. So for me, I watch guys like Durant, James, Curry, and Westbrook, guys like that. That's where I want to be. I think for me, that's what I love to watch. He claims he doesn't even watch Donovan Mitchell.
Well, I think we all know he does.
Come on. Who is this guy?
Look, he's talking a big game. And look, if he wins, he wins. Great. But he's certainly not the only one in the conversation. And I wouldn't even pick him as the rookie of the year. I'd be taking Donovan Mitchell. I just think Mitchell has a better all-around game. And like, there's people comparing, you know, Simmons to Magic Johnson. And, well, Magic Johnson could actually shoot the basketball effectively. Yeah. You know, like, and that's my biggest problem. We see this shooting problem, and I don't understand how guys like Ben Simmons can't shoot the basketball consistently. How is that possible? How are you – and this is my biggest gripe with Lonzo, too. How are you an NBA player and you can't shoot the basketball effectively?
It is so perplexing.
Like, I don't – how did you get here? Just on talent and size? Okay, yes. Well, I guess that's great. You're here now. So actually give me something besides, you know, running up and down in transition. Because this is really how Ben Simmons got here, right?
Yes.
They play transition basketball, and Ben Simmons is able to win those matchups because he's typically longer than the guy who he's running towards in transition. Because typically that guy is going to be a one or a two. And Ben Simmons, honestly, is a three or a four. You know, he's 6'10". Really long wingspan, can go straight up over you, can really jump. Like, he's got all the intangibles, right? That's why he wins that matchup and has the flashy plays. But as a raw basketball player, somebody who can just take you one-on-one, he's not beating most guys. That's not his game.
And the real issue is he has zero outside jumper. Like, yeah. Everybody points to the fact that he shoots a really high percentage. Ben Simmons, if you think about this, and I know it's crazy. How many threes do you think Ben Simmons has made this year?
Very few. I couldn't even put a number on it.
How about zero? Not a single freaking three. Like, that's amazing to me.
Why is that?
Because he can't shoot, well, that, which is why he shoots 56% from the free throw line.
So, and that's really my point. You know, so the first part of my point here is that, yeah, he shoots 56%. And what does that tell you? He doesn't have a great shot. But the other part of this is he hasn't made any three-pointers because they feed him the ball every time. Hey, bring it up and do what you can with it. That's their offense.
Yeah.
Right? And so he's got Covington. He's got Redick. Like, he's got these guys who can really shoot. So that alleviates, that basically gets rid of his shooting problem.
Yeah. And by the way, you look at a guy in Donovan Mitchell who's about to set the rookie record for threes made.
Yeah.
You look at a guy in Donovan Mitchell who on the year has shot 34%, who's averaging 20 and a half points a game. And this is the other thing that everybody gets all, oh, Ben Simmons is averaging 16 points a game. Donovan Mitchell shooting 34% from three and averaging 20 points a game. You're at 16 points a game and eight assists. So you're not a scorer.
Yeah,
I get it. You're a facilitator. Donovan's both. Donovan's 20 points a game, 3.7 assists, and he gives you four boards a night. So I agree that statistically speaking, Ben Simmons is a little more diverse, but it's not close. That Donovan Mitchell is a much more well-rounded player than Ben Simmons. Much more.
Yeah, and that's why I think, like, it's interesting comparing these two, but you can compare Lonzo and Ben Simmons because, frankly, their game, in a sense, is very similar in the fact that they don't shoot a lot. They facilitate. They rebound. Because they can't shoot, they got to make the extra effort plays. And that gives them a good reputation. And, wow, we made a great play. It's like if we were actually comparing, all right, who's the better basketball player all around? Better defender, better offensive player, rebounder. I honestly think it wouldn't even be that close.
No.
But because Ben Simmons is on the Sixers, and they're young and hip, and Donovan Mitchell plays in Utah with the Australian guy and Ricky Rubio, like,
the Australian guy.
Well, that's his reputation, right? Jingles is not well known. He's known for shooting threes, and the fact that he's from Australia is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem. So, I don't know. I just think there's a lot of things working against Donovan, but I would still pick him.
Donovan Mitchell's the rookie of the year. With all due respect to Ben Simmons, saying that Donovan Mitchell is non-existent, he's never caught my eye. Then you're not watching the NBA. Donovan Mitchell could arguably be an MVP candidate.
Yeah.
And I think we'll get MVP votes. Ben Simmons will not get MVP votes. Like, the Jazz are not in the playoffs without Ben Simmons or without Donovan Mitchell. They're just not. The process has brought in more talent And Joel Embiid is arguably their best player. And Markelle Fultz now is contributing. And you look at the total package, they've got Covington. They've got J.J. Redick. Donovan Mitchell, on 7 out of 10 nights, Donovan Mitchell is the Jazz.
Yeah.
Now, Ricky Rubio's come up. He had that huge game the other night. Like, and Ruby's played really well, and he's contributed consistently, and I think he's given them a flair and a spark. Rudy Gobert, obviously, is, I think, the best rim protector in the NBA, probably the defensive player of the year. Their defense is great. Their bench is tenacious. Okay, all this great stuff about the Jazz. But overall, he is it unrealistic to describe the Jazz as a team that had been led by Donovan Mitchell and are about to win the third spot in the West?
Yeah.
I don't think it is. I think that's exactly who they are. And I think he's earned it. Anyway, here near there. I wrote about this on the website. Make sure you find me, themontyshow.com. M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. You can also find us on SoundCloud and iTunes. Guess what it's called on SoundCloud and iTunes? The Monty Show. I want to talk real quick about this Donald Trump story before we get to baseball. So I'm fascinated by this. Admittedly, it involves pornography. Hello. Admittedly, it involves powerful men and pornography and sex.
Not the first time we've been down this road.
Yeah, like the chemistry kit for destroying a man is sex, pornography, and power. Those three things. Like if you're watching the Kennedys on CNN, the documentary series, The Kennedys on CNN, JFK was a hound dog. Marilyn Monroe, the whole thing. Donald Trump had an affair with Stormy Daniels. If you believe the president of the United States, and I, because I am an American, and this is America, I tend to believe the Don. The Don claims he had no knowledge that his lawyer, Michael Cohen, made a $130,000 payment to the voluptuous, the voluptuous,
well-endowed,
hello, Stormy Daniels, who is a porn star, who claims that she had sex with Donald Trump one time, and he tried to have sex with her the second time, she shot it down. In the weeks and days before the election, I believe it's 11 days before the election for president, Stormy Daniels was paid $130,000 by Michael Cohen. Now you fast forward to all this scandal breaking this year, and we know that there's a non-disclosure agreement. And we know that Donald Trump's name is on that agreement, and his alias, David Dennison, and he never signed it. In a nutshell, Stormy Daniels says it's not executed because Donald didn't sign it. I'm not bound by it. I'm going to start telling the story. Donald Trump is asked about it last Thursday, I believe it was, on Air Force One. Did you make that payment to Stormy Daniels? Did you know about it? No, I did not. You have to talk to Michael Cohen about that. Well, the obvious inference there is I didn't know about it. Michael Cohen acted on his own. That's a huge problem because Michael Cohen is Donald Trump's lawyer. And that would mean that he violated his fiduciary, which is his ethical obligation to Donald Trump, because he acted on behalf of his client without his client's knowledge, entered him into a non-disclosure agreement, and paid somebody $130,000. Well, today, the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York State raided Michael Cohen's office and seized documents, and the president is fired up about it. So you hear all this, Jake. What do you think? You're a damn millennial.
I don't believe the president for a second. I just think he has zero credibility. I think him and
Michael, that didn't take long.
I think him and Michael Cohen are working together to try and shoot this down and take any credibility away from Stormy. And I just think they're working to defend themselves in a sense. And I can appreciate that on some level. I probably, if I was Trump, I'd be doing the same thing. Because what other choice does he have? He doesn't really have another choice. You can either own up to it, which is, way back there, 10 miles
down
the road. Why
wouldn't you? Here's the problem. If you're Donald Trump, why wouldn't you have said, yes, I had sex with her It was 10 years ago.
Here's what happened. Big deal. All right, we'll see you later.
Yeah. So I cheated on my wife. I'm not the first president who's done that.
Now make America great again and go kill ISIS.
Lock her up, Bill Clinton. Lock her up, lock her up, lock her up, MAGA, and let's go on with our lives.
But he didn't do that. He chose to hide it, and now we find ourselves here. And so I just think that this was, you know, this was always going to happen. At some point, Cohen was going to be found and hunted down, and they were going to get those documents.
Amazing.
In my opinion, again, just having some basic knowledge of law, they couldn't have done that unless they had a lot of evidence, you know, to get that kind of a warrant and to get that kind of, you know, action moving for them. So they have something, and those documents, in my opinion, are going to solidify the entire case. I think that's the missing piece. Once they get through all that and find what they're looking for, it's over. It's over.
Dude, it's ugly. I mean, there's no other way to view this. This is ugly, nasty business. And I'm fascinated by it. I think all America, if you're not fascinated by it, are you fascinated by it? Are you intrigued? Do you,
I definitely follow it. I don't enjoy the Kennedys documentary very much at all. I mean, yeah.
Really?
It's the Kennedys. Like, yeah, they...
But you're so, that's so before your time.
It is. So, like, this, for me, like Bill Clinton, the whole Bill Clinton thing was interesting, but this is my generation's Bill Clinton, obviously. So,
yeah.
I do follow it, definitely.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by it.
How do you not follow it?
I'm tired of it, though. I'm at a point where I need some resolution. I'm tired of hearing about Russian collusion. Like, I'm tired of it. We watch Homeland every week on Showtime. And Homeland's even doing this Russian storyline, which is great. If you don't watch Homeland Sunday nights on Showtime, you're really missing out. I'm ready for something else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I am truly
ready
for something
else. And we talked about this in the truck several days ago. You know, American politics were spoiled by how easy the Obama's presidency was.
Like, oh, yeah.
There wasn't a lot of drama. Now, politically, of course, there's always going to be disagreements.
We weren't cleaning up a mess every day.
Like, we were talking about his foreign policy and just things of that nature. Like, things you would expect to be fighting about politically. We were fighting about those things. Now, we just find ourselves watching CNN with Poppy Harlow every morning and listening to her talk about how Stormy got paid.
Did you say Poppy Harlow on this show?
Yes,
you did.
I did.
Yeah, and Donald, you know, it's not like Donald Trump is better or worse than Barack Obama. It's not like Barack Obama was the greatest president ever. Don't mistake that. It's just we didn't have scandal every day. We didn't have 1,000-point swings based on trade wars that didn't need to happen.
Yeah.
That's really the difference. Anyway, were you fascinated by Shohei Ohtani? I know you weren't because you don't believe in this guy. You haven't bought into this yet. And no. Why is that?
Because I think we're still at the beginning of the year. I think, you know, you were all gung-ho about, oh, he's almost got a perfect game. It's like a perfect game is such rarefied air. The idea that he would throw a perfect game is not a joke, but it's almost laughable. It is almost laughable.
Why?
Because,
he almost threw a perfect game.
But almost doesn't count. It is rarefied air. I don't want to hear about almost when it comes to perfect games.
Perfect games are not 26 outs. They're 27.
They're 27. Yeah. And I think people just throw around. This is the difference for me. Like, I play the game. You play the game. You understand the significance of it. I don't throw around, hey, homeboy's, you know, perfect through seven. Okay, let me know when we get to the ninth inning with two outs. And then I'll flip over. Like, it was enjoyable to watch him pitch, and I think he's learning how to use that splitter, you know, much more effectively now.
Best splitter in baseball
now. It's really messing with guys, mm-hmm. But at some point, people have to figure out he's going to come at you with the fastball, and then he's going to work the splitter off the fastball. And then, once he gets comfortable enough, the slider's going to come into the picture.
Seven innings, a hit, a walk, and 12 strikeouts. Here's the impressive part.
Mm-hmm.
12 strikeouts. Seven innings, 91 pitches.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was effective. There's no doubt about that. I'm not saying he's not effective. I am not sitting here saying that he sucks. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is there's a difference between having a great outing and throwing a perfect game.
Yeah, you're not on board yet. I'm good. I'm not killing you for that.
I also think one thing people have to consider is that this is his first season in Major League Baseball. So that works two ways. expectations are way too high, number one.
Okay.
Number two, the league is not even close to catching up to him yet.
Right, but his spring training was horrendous.
Oh, it was horrible. And I think I think a lot of that spring training for Ohtani was not typical spring training. That was a press tour for him, essentially. That's what he had to deal with. He was in the spotlight every moment of every day. Anytime he was out, he was in the spotlight. So now, I think he's settled in now. Now I think he's gotten closer to his teammates. On the home runs, his teammates have messed with him and had fun with him. And, like, there's all this great camaraderie on that team right now. And so I just think once he settles in, which he appears to have done on the mound, I think he's going to be a contributor for them. Offensively, I agree with you. I think offensively it's going to be hard for him to keep up because he is not a full two-way player yet. A full two-way player would be a starting pitcher and a guy that plays the field and hits. That's a full two-way player. What he's doing is he's DHing for 3 days, he's pitching once, and then he's got a rest day built in. Right. So he's not a full two way.
He's playing
player.
Baseball 5 days a week.
Yeah. You know, so, and I can appreciate that. That's actually a pretty big deal. We haven't seen somebody do that for a long time. But I think they're still the Angels. Mike Socha is still going to manage them into the ground at some point. And Shohei Ohtani is still going to have to prove himself. I mean, talk to me when you're keeping up with the Astros in June and July.
Like, Mike Socha's still going to manage him into the ground at some point.
He is.
Well, they're not going to win because they don't have pitching.
Well, that's true. That's very true.
I agree with you that Mike Socha's not manager of the year material. But Shohei Ohtani should be... Look, man, this is not lifting weight.
Would you agree that the Angels don't have an excuse anymore to lose? They have what they need.
They have terrible pitching. Their pitching is brutal. That's why they need this guy to be an ace. They need Shohei Ohtani to be an ace because they have Gerrit Cole, and that's it. Shoemaker's on the disabled list with a forearm strain, which means Tommy John is not too far down the road.
Yeah,
like they don't have a bullpen. They don't have pitching. Like, this guy is so important. But here's the other thing. It's not football. We're not asking this guy to play linebacker 6 days a week. It's baseball.
Yeah.
Okay? Get your long toss in, get your bullpen in, and then go take batting practice, bro. If you got to get to the park an hour earlier on the day that you're throwing a side piece, get to the park an hour earlier. Do you want to hit 6 days a week and pitch once? Great. Okay, you want to only play him 5 days a week? Give me four DHs and one starting pitching.
I would be 100% fine with that.
But they won't do that. And I think part of this is the story's too good right now. The energy that Shohei Ohtani is giving the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim is too much to risk because their fans have bought in. We know a ton of Angel fans. They've all bought in. They're all excited. He's on TV. They're making bobbleheads. They're like, if you look at the Big A in Anaheim, there are tons of Japanese advertisements from airlines to merchant shops online to banking, like, a ton.
And I don't even disagree that they should be taking advantage of all that. Take advantage of all of it. Do it. Like, crush it.
But what you can't do is put him in an 0 for 25.
Yeah.
Because eventually, that's coming, but eventually you're going to be like, yeah, we're going to give this hitting thing a rest.
Yep. Well, and that's why I say, like, it's still so early on, and that's the difference between baseball and football, let's say. A guy can be a running back and be a linebacker. He can attempt it. But the difference in football is that's not nearly the finesse game that baseball is.
And you're playing once a week in the NFL.
Yeah, you know.
You play 16 games a year.
Yeah, like you're playing 162 games in a season.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but I also agree with you. Hitting, he does have that hole in his swing. And at some point, that will be exploited. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same thing that happened to Jock Peterson. Jock Peterson lit it up for a season, and then he's nobody now. He's very pedestrian now.
Correct. Ian Happ,
same thing.
Can't do anything but strike out. By the way, can I now panic as a Chicago Cub fan?
Bro, come on.
Because the man, the 44, Anthony Rizzo, is on the disabled list with a back issue. Now, they say he'll be off the DL as early as Monday, a week from today. Retroactive. He hasn't played in several days. They got rained out today or snowed out in Chicago for their opener against Pittsburgh. That's tomorrow now. This is a big deal. because Caratini's not a first baseman for Maier and we, the Chicago Cubs of Chicago. Like, he's not a first baseman. That guy, that's not going to work. If Anthony Rizzo is out for any significant amount of time, this is a big deal now. And the Cubs, granted, they're playing really well. They took 3 of 4 in Milwaukee over the weekend. So they're playing well this time through the rotation. I was really impressed with the way Quintana pitched. He was down the whole time. I thought Johnny Lester pitched much better. Like, everybody pitched really well. Darvish pitched well. Hendricks pitched well. Like, they pitched much better, right? But Anthony Rizzo is the straw that stirs the drink on this team.
Well.
And there's not a backup for him at first base. You know what the backup is?
I agree with that.
You know who the backup is?
It's Chris Bryant. Yeah.
And you're going to wind up, if this goes on for any amount of time, you're probably going to wind up playing KB over there. And then you're going to have to play a guy like Javi Baez at third, or you're going to have to figure something out.
That would be the natural thing to do. Baez at third, Zobrist at second, Chris Bryant at first, and then you figure out the outfield.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, which is fine.
You know, I get your concern with his injury, but at the same time, last week all I heard about is that the Brewers are for real. And
they are.
Well, that may be true, but they're not for real right now.
Well, they can't pitch. We figured that out over the weekend.
Well, that's becoming a common theme on this show, apparently. You know, the Brewers may be for real, but they're not for real right now, and I think this would be a good time. If Rizzo's going to get hurt, this would be a great time for it to happen because you're still early in the season.
I would agree with that.
You're not playing pressure baseball. You're trying to get into the flow of the season still, which I think is a big misconception for people who are only casual observers. People think day one, opening day, you're already in the season. That's not how it works. It's a 20-30 game process to get into that. The ins and outs, the little minutia of what goes on in the locker room and just all these little things, it takes time to develop.
So you're telling me not to be worried?
There's no reason to worry. They will win the division.
When should I worry?
July.
I wouldn't say, listen, again, I think you're writing off the Brewers. I'm not ready to write off the Brewers.
Well, what's
I think
telling you that they're going to be around?
Because I have to believe at some point that the Brewers figure out you actually need guys who can pitch in the big leagues to go with all that offense and that defense.
Yeah.
At some point, you would think that that's going to happen. Now, I'm not telling you that I'm freaking out over the Cubs. What I'm telling you is that Anthony Rizzo is not a small loss from that lineup.
Well, of course.
He's a big left-handed bat, and there's no way to replace that, and Caratini's not going to do that.
Yeah.
So that's a big concern for me. But more, I feel a little better now because I think Ian Happ probably strikes out 300 times this year. He doesn't. He'll probably strike out 90. But their lineup, I think you're getting good performances now. You're starting to see guys like Chris Bryant, Contreras. I'm really worried about Kyle Schwarber. He's having terrible at-bats again, swinging at pitches in the dirt, swinging at pitches above the letters, striking out constantly. Like, he is becoming an issue for the Cubs. That worries me. So we'll see. Find me at online, themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. One team that I don't understand why their base is freaking out is the San Diego Padres. Let's talk Padre baseball quickly. Eric Hosmer had a moment on Saturday night that just is an atrocity.
Regrettable, to say the least.
He's a major league first baseman. There was a pop fly hit on the infield 6 feet in front of home plate. Clearly the first baseman's ball. He overran it. The ball dropped. The Astros won the game in extra innings. It sucked, right? Padre fans automatically went to the woodshed against him. And we're talking about how overpaid, what are we doing? This is not that. And I'm like, wait a minute, what were the expectations for the San Diego Padres this year? For me, the expectations are not, hey, we're going to contend for a playoff spot. Not right now, you're not. You've got legitimately, I don't know, 5 major league arms coming through your system in the next 2 years. Like, the San Diego Padres have top-tier talent throughout their system. High A, low A ball, double A, triple A. They've got arms. They've got guys like Tatis Jr. They've got guys that are not ready to play in the big leagues yet. So you're getting Villanueva getting picked off a second base in a one-run game. And it's just like, damn.
How does that even happen?
Yeah, that's who the Padres are right now, though. Why is Eric Hosmer here? Well, it's the same reason that Theo Epstein's first acquisition was John Lester from Boston, because you need a guy who knows how to win. Eric Hosmer knows how to win, but he's also a guy that plays every day at first base and he's going to make errors. Mm-hmm. It sucks the way that one happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think the casual observer thinks that's just an egregious mistake, and that's a really easy play. And that's not an easy play. He should make the play. Not an easy play, though. And especially in that situation, not an easy play. He made a mistake. He misread the ball. What else do you say? He missed the play. It happens.
He missed a pop-up.
It happens. That doesn't mean the guy's terrible or sucks. Frankly, the guy's probably going to win you a couple games on his own.
He's an
just
all-star.
By hitting home runs.
He's an all-star. He is. Eric Hosmer's not the problem here.
No.
All right? Will Myers is much more of a problem than Eric Hosmer.
Yeah.
But you can see the foundation with the way Lucchesi's pitching, with the way that you can see Freddie Galvis is a guy that you want here for the long haul. You want him and Hosmer to play together. You don't want Villanueva or Chase Headley at third base. Those are not long-term answers. And frankly, I'm not even convinced that Will Myers is a long-term answer. The only guys, when I look at the San Diego Padres, if Austin Hedges is in the game when that ball goes up in the air that Hosmer missed, he's either calling for it or communicating. One of the things that did not happen there is that A.J. Ellis, who was in the game, by the way.
Quality catcher.
Good catcher. But he's not the commander-in-chief behind the plate. That's not who A.J. Ellis is. A.J. did not get up. He never left home plate. Granted, there was a runner on third. I get that. He never left home plate. He's got to be there. He, in my opinion, he has to be contending to catch that ball. And he wasn't. And I think Eric Hosmer had an incredibly long run.
Listen, I think the biggest problem there was the pitcher. The pitcher should not have even been in the conversation. He needs to get the hell out of the way. I don't know what was going on there, but he should not have been there. It's Hosmer's ball the whole way. I agree. A.J. Ellis probably should have just been yelling, "Hey, you know, that's yours. That's
Hos,
yours.
Hos,
yeah,
Hos,
you know,
Hos,
like,
Hos."
He just needs to be asserting the fact that Hosmer is taking that and
yes,
catching that baseball.
Correct.
Because when you're again, I keep saying this today, but people don't think about the fact that imagine you and three of your friends are just looking up in the sky at a baseball. You're not looking at each other like, "Hey, are you going to catch that?" Or "What about you over there?" No, you're looking up in the sky, keeping your eye on the ball, and the only thing you have to go off of is your voice and listening. So
it is uncomfortable.
It's an uncomfortable feeling, and that's why you see collisions in the outfield sometimes.
But
or plays
in
like
particular,
this.
Pop flies in front of the plate are very difficult to deal with. Pop
in
flies,
a dome.
Yeah. Pop flies, by the way, the roof was closed. Pop flies with from the pitching mound to home plate anywhere in that area
impossible.
Are always difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
And the thing that really bothers me about baseball is why can't the pitcher make that play?
Because it's just not it is not a good idea. Number one.
Yeah.
Well, no, but hear me out. Number one, the pitcher is not on flat ground. So the idea that you're going to throw that ball, you're going to have to successfully run off the mound without tripping, and then you want to catch that ball when you never practice catching fly balls. Pitchers don't do that.
Correct.
Infielders do it. Surely outfielders do it. Pitchers do not.
Correct.
Pitchers throw a baseball for a living, and that's it.
Correct. Yeah. And look, man, I hear what you're saying. They got to be able to catch that. Either way, my point on all this is the Padres are right where they're supposed to be. If Lamet was healthy, think about who they'd have in their rotation. You would have Lucchesi, Brian Mitchell, who you traded for, and Lamet.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be three core guys that you hope are here for 5 years.
Yeah.
Right? You team that with Galvis, Hosmer, all these other guys like Hunter Renfroe or, you know, like Asuaje. He's take it or leave it. Villanueva, no. Perella, probably not. Manuel Margot, I actually like.
Yeah.
You have pieces in place, but you're not keeping Chase Headley or A.J. Ellis or Spangenberg or Caesar or you're not keeping these guys. The most exciting thing about this team right now, if you are a Padre fan, should be pitching because the bullpen, you know, Lyles has been good. Stammen's been outstanding.
Yeah, very reliable.
Yeah, Craig Stammen's been outstanding. Brad Hand's been, I wouldn't trust him, but you have a solid bullpen.
And by the way, For all these people taking Hosmer to the woodshed, I would tell you to keep this in mind. They were in every game in that series. And when you went into that series, did you actually think they were going to win that series or, frankly, win even one of those games? No, you didn't.
Probably not.
That Padres team is good enough to hang with anybody. Winning's a different story, but they will be in games.
Their base running is atrocious. Their fundamentals are atrocious. Like
that's where the Padres are. They are in the development stage for a lot of their guys.
Correct. And I have no problem with it because I got to tell you, just looking at their and again, right now, by the way, Will Myers is not playing. Decent right fielder, not great, but the guy can rake.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not in their lineup. My point is, I look at their minor leaguers and the guys that they've drafted, it's coming. Just relax. But
one thing to keep in mind is the fact that, think about the way fans felt. The Angels with Ohtani. Yes, we got Ohtani. Yes, we got Hosmer. Very excited. This is going to make us a good team. That's not necessarily the case in baseball. In basketball, it's the case. With a quarterback in the NFL, it's the case. But not in baseball. It's a different beast.
Yeah. Like that James Shields trade that the Padres made to get Fernando Tatis Jr., that guy's 19 years old.
It's a good trade.
And I think he could fight and scratch at the big league level right now, but why rush it? He's 19.
You have no incentive to rush it, and that's what people have to understand. They're not tanking. They're just not in a place where they're ready to win yet and take that step.
Yeah. Look, I'm with you. I am. Before we get out of here.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of routines, right? Like, I'm a big fan of routines.
Right. We get it.
We get it. Like, I take vitamins every single night before I go to bed, usually at the same time. I take my morning vitamins right after I'm done doing my hair. Like, I put some juju in my hair.
Baby.
I make this artiste-looking thing, this coif that I have.
Like Trump.
Like, it's amazing, man. Before I get on Air Force One, I take my vitamins, right? Because it's routine.
Well, you don't
really.
Ride
my Air Force
One,
yeah, my
shoes,
yeah,
like
my Air
different.
Force One. Well, this is true. Air Force 270,
yeah,
Safari. But anyway, the point is, my Air Force One is a Toyota Tacoma. Anyway,
right.
That, just a small difference.
Which
just,
we don't have right, but
just anyway. Want to point that out, yeah. You know, because it's not safety sensed. Anyway, here nor there. I'm a guy. I'm a guy of routine, and I'm quite bitter. But. There are a Bro Bible article from Men's Health.
This will be good.
So if you don't read brobible.com,
you're
wrong.
You're missing out.
You're
bro.
Doing it wrong.
Bro.
Bro. Hey, bro. Hey, bra. It's actually bra. Didn't we decide it was bra, not bro? Five habits that all men should do. Exercise first thing in the morning. As soon as your phone goes off and wakes you up. Make sure you exercise. Just take 2-3 minutes. Perform a simple body weight exercise like a push-up, a squat. Hold a plank for a bit. Better yet, we get up at 4:30 every day and we go to the gym. We either lift weights or we play basketball.
Yeah.
I'm healthier for it. I'm stronger for it. I love it. Here's one that I won't be doing. Taking cold showers. Feel free to not even bother reading this one. It's absolutely awful, is what Bro Bible wrote. Yes, it is. The Spartans used to shower in the cold. Well, the good news is we're civilized and we're not the Spartans. Tip number three, move more. Take walks at night. We do that. I use a Fitbit Ionic that's also broken right now. Man, just smash my face into a wall. Seriously, I got so much BS that's not working in my life right now, from my freaking Tacoma to my Fitbit Ionic. Anyway. I digress. Move more. By moving a little every day, you'll start to improve your fitness level and burn extra calories. I already burn 4,200 calories a day. Ding! Here's one that we just took on about 6 weeks ago. Clean up your diet. One meal at a time. It's really that simple. Giving up anything that has sugar or refined carbohydrates. Jerks.
Pasta.
Yeah, bread. I miss bread. You know that cliche, you are what you eat. Well, this is pretty much true. A tried and true method to start cleaning up your diet is to start by switching one meal at a time. Get a healthy breakfast. Yeah, we do that. I eat oats a lot of days, or Jake makes eggs, whatever. Tip number five, sleep more, stress less.
Hell yeah.
We generally sleep 7 hours a night. Try to be in bed by 9 o'clock. To get up at 4:30 in the morning. So we get 7.5 hours of sleep. Pretty solid, right?
Mm-hmm.
pretty happy with that one. I'll never, ever, ever shower cold. I cannot live without a hot shower. The problem is, you know, when we're in Arizona, it's 100 degrees, and then you take a hot shower.
In the middle of the summer, I take cold showers.
I take lukewarm showers. I do not take cold showers. But there's nothing like, oh, man. Waking up, and it's like 40 degrees outside, and you get in that hot shower.
Whoa.
You get goosebumps. You pop out a set of diamond cutters. Like, it is, life is good. And finally, themontyshow.com. Jack Nicholson's Joker voted the number one comic book villain of all time.
Dude, stop. Stop.
Oh, I'm upset about this. Here are the top 10. Terrence Stamp, General Zod from Superman. Okay, I don't mind that. 9, Harley Quinn, played by Margot Robbie in The Suicide Squad.
Embarrassing.
I didn't love that character. Mr. Freeze from Batman and Robin is portrayed by Arnold Schwarzenegger. I like this one a lot. Bane from The Dark Knight Rises. That would be Tom Hardy. Magneto from the X-Men films. Yes. That's a really good one, Ian McKellen. Loki from Thor in the Avengers film. No.
That's weak.
No,
that's
sorry. Weak. Sorry, Tom Hiddleston, no. Gene Hackman is Lex Luger in Superman 1 and 2? Absolutely. Films of my childhood that Jake has never seen. Danny DeVito's The Penguin in Batman Returns? Yes. Number 2, The Joker from The Dark Knight, played by Heath Ledger. Terrible. Hi. Is it the scars? I couldn't have rigged those charges.
Yeah.
I don't want there to be any hard feelings between us, Harvey. Heath Ledger's The Joker is absolutely the number one villain ever, ever, ever played in a comic book movie.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
That you would put Jack Nicholson ahead of this is ridiculous. It is terrible. It is an atrocity. It simply pisses me off. Because Heath Ledger, God rest his soul, amen, was a much better Batman nemesis than Jack Nicholson was. His Heath Ledger's Joker, the simple mannerisms, the, you know, even little lines like, you know, like little, we made
it. The minutia of the character.
You know?
Yeah.
I hated my father.
Yeah.
Like those little lines? It's a very poor choice of words.
The part where he's coming out of the hospital and his bomb clicker doesn't work?
Yes. Totally ad-libbed. Yes. 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 I love that. Jack Nicholson wasn't bad as the Joker, but I would take Bane over Jack Nicholson's the Joker. Frankly, I think I would take Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor over Jack Nicholson's the Joker. It's just a terrible list. It's a terrible list. Anyway, speaking of a terrible list, here's a list of ways to find us. SoundCloud and iTunes. It's not a terrible list. SoundCloud and iTunes, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Find us on Twitter, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. And, of course, find us online, themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. We'll see you tomorrow. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.